Thank you very much for kindly coming to take part in today's program. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, second chapter, text 61. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matparaha vashehi asyendriyani tasya pragya pratishtita. Lord Krishna says, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Purport. That the highest conception of yoga perfection is Krishna consciousness is clearly explained in this verse. And unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control the senses. As cited above in a previous verse, the great sage Durvasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish, and Durvasa Muni unnecessarily became angry out of pride and therefore could not check his senses. On the other hand, the king, although not as powerful a yogi as the sage, but a devotee of the Lord, silently tolerated all the sage's injustices and thereby emerged victorious. The king was able to control his senses because of the following qualifications, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Savai mana krishna parada vindayor pachamsi vaikuntha gunanuvarnane karau harer mandira marjanadishu shrutim chakara chuta satkatodaye Mukundalingalaya darshane drishau tad pritya gatra sparshinga sangamam granam chatat pada saroja saurabhe srimatulasya rasanam tadarpite padau hare kshetra padanu sarpane shiro vishikesha padabhivandane kamam chadasye natu kama kamyaya yatotama shloka janashraya ratihi. King Ambarish fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where his temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances to the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. And all these qualifications made him fit to become a matpara devotee of the Lord. The word matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, a great scholar and acharya in the line of the matpara, remarks, Madbhakti prabhadena sarvendriya vijaya purvika swatma drishti sulabheti bhava. The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. Also, the example of fire is sometimes given. As a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up all kinds of impurities. The Yoga Sutra also prescribes meditation on Vishnu and not meditation on the void. The so-called yogis who meditate on something which is not on the Vishnu platform simply waste their time in a vain search after some phantasmagoria. We have to be Krishna conscious, devoted to the personality of Godhead. This is the aim of the real yoga. Om Jnana Tirandasya
Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manupistam Stapitam Jena Bhutane Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapanantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shabatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhamu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kolpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Lord Krishna here describes the consciousness of a person who's fixed on the spiritual platform. Tasya pragya pratishthita. In the material world, we're not fixed. We're generally in a whirlpool formed of the material energy. The material energy is pulling us by different attractions. Just like when in the summertime, so often the ice cream trucks are going by, right? Their little bells, and immediately the children hear the sound and they're all ears. And they're like an unstoppable force. Oh, give me some money, give me some money. I want some ice cream. Naturally. So, not only children, but adults also. The bells go off, and out we go. Sometimes it's to the same ice cream truck, the very same one. Or sometimes it's something else that attracts us. I was traveling with some young people lately, and there was some billboard of a, I don't know what kind of car, but a real snazzy one. And the young men, at least, were all eyes. Ooh, cool. And, of course, they didn't have that kind of money, but if they did, they might have been, that might have been step one on the way to the car showroom. We're attracted in different ways. Our ears attract us, our eyes attract us, the tongue attracts us. Not that attracts us, but something attracts the tongue, something attracts the ears, something attracts our eyes. Something's attracting all the senses. And we're generally moving around in this material world on the basis of that sense attraction. We want to enjoy. We want to enjoy. And so we're following the path toward enjoyment. Of course, it's a problem because the appearance of enjoyment in the material world is something other than what it's supposed to be. Or something other than what... It is exactly what it's supposed to be, but it's not what we'd like it to be. It's called maya, or illusion. Because what appears to be enjoyable, once we get it, is not the same as what we had in mind. If it's ice cream, it drips. If it's cars, they break down, they get in accidents, something happens. Whatever it is that we get, it's never quite what we had in mind. And there's always a price tag that goes along with it. Either a cash price, or an emotional price, or a hard work price, or some sort of price that goes along with it. And added up all together, they complicate us, they entangle us in so many things, in so much finally work. The whole world, everyone, every adult is working, practically. And what adult likes to work? If someone ran for office here in Boston, that when I become mayor, I'll arrange things in such a way no one will have to work anymore. If, of course, no one would take him seriously, but if there were actually such a prospect, he'd be landslide candidate. He'd immediately be voted in. No one really wants to work. We work because we're paid. Everyone would say, "I love my job," but if they didn't pay you, would you go? Oh no. I don't love my job that much. So I'm working. Why am I working? Because I have to pay for all the things that I want for happiness in this world. All of those things that have price tags attached to them. And it becomes troublesome in so many ways, particularly when our senses go out of control, which they do. The senses, first of all, half the world or more is not even trying to control the senses. What is this control of the senses? Control is artificial. Control is unnatural. Just, you know, whatever comes, it's good. So don't even bother to control the senses. Just follow the senses. Wherever they lead, let's go. So, Adanta Gobir Vishadanta Mishra. That's quickly problematic because the uncontrolled senses lead us into all sorts of difficulty. We become servants of the senses. We become servants of the senses. And so many people get in so much difficulty. Eating more than they can digest, eating more than they want to eat, saying things they don't want to say, hurting other people, hurting themselves, getting into relationships that they don't want to be in, or that they do want to be in, but turn out embarrassing when other people find out about them. So many difficulties come when our senses go out and buy something on credit and then find out that you can't really pay for it. It's going to cost you 14% or something like that, minimum, per month. 14% interest. But I really wanted it. So in so many ways, when our senses are uncontrolled, we become slaves, actually. We become indentured servants of these senses. Therefore, yoga means indriya samyam. Yoga means the art of controlling the senses. Unless there's sense control, there's no yoga. The yogis who are coming to America and promising that you don't have to follow any restrictions, you just do this little practice, are cheaters. Because yoga means control of the senses. If I remain the servant of my senses, but I'm practicing yoga, what is the meaning of that yoga? It's not actually yoga. Maybe it's like calisthenics or something. I can lose some weight, I can look good. But actual yoga practice means especially learning how to control my senses, to become master of the senses. The person who's the servant of his senses is not free. We can say, I live in a free country, it's a free world, I enjoy my freedom. But with all that freedom, I'm actually a slave, as long as my senses have control of me. But the person who can control his senses is actually free. He can do what his intelligence advises, and not what his senses dictate. the person who's controlled by the senses, even when his intelligence tells him this is not the thing to do, says, yeah, but what can I do? The senses are pulling me. Something like a man who has five wives, and one wife is pulling, it's like, let's do this. And the other wife is like, let's do this. And another wife is pulling, let's do this. He's in great difficulty. It's very hard. Even the wives say, come on, let's enjoy. Come on, let's enjoy. What enjoyment will he get? Pulled in five different directions. So the person who can't control his senses is like that. The senses are pulling him in this direction and that. And his intelligence is not strong enough to take charge and say, let's do what makes sense. Let's do what's sensible. Instead, he's doing what's sensuous. His senses are taking charge. So, yoga indriya samyama. The yogis, therefore, you see them sitting in a particular posture and practicing breathing exercises. So many things they do. Great austerities, even. Sometimes the real yogis, they'll make a fire, a big circle of fire, and they'll sit in the middle of the circle, in the midst of the noonday sun, in India, not Boston. And they'll sit there. Why? They're drilling their senses, that sun may beat down on me, the fire may pour heat on me, and still I'll remain calm and patient. Or in the winter, they'll stand in water up to their necks, freezing water, controlling the senses. Not so easy. But the powerful yogis can do that. So I suppose you haven't come here today to learn how to do those things. And that's fine, because we don't teach those things. But we do teach control of the senses. How do we teach control of the senses? By positive engagement of the senses. Simply stopping the senses, putting a rein on the senses, will be very difficult. Because the senses will complain, why are you restricting me? Why are you restricting me? The mind also, which is the center of the senses, will also take charge. Why are you restricting us? They'll find some way to break out. Something forcibly, you're forcibly holding the senses back, and some sooner or later, like a water rushing over a dam, they just break through. And that in Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says, even one of the senses in which the mind becomes fixed and carry away the intelligence, even of a person who's trying to control it. The way a boat on the water catches a gust and before you know it, it's down the stream. When we try to control the senses, they act like that. We've taken a vow, I'm not going to eat this, I'm not going to do this, and next thing we know, we've eaten it, we've done it, we've whatever it was. Because these senses don't like being told no. They don't like being told no. They rebel. So the Krishna conscious process focuses on engaging the senses in superior activity. The senses and the mind. The mind is the center of the senses. All the senses send their impressions to the mind, and the mind has the business of choosing one or the other, or rejecting. So the senses and mind can be controlled when they have superior engagement. The example given is Maharaj Ambarish and this yogi Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni was a yogi of the old style, one of those people you might find in the midst of the ring of fire with the sun beating down. And Maharaj Ambarish was a king. And there was some dispute among them. The Durvasa Muni thought that Maharaj Ambarish had offended him in some way, and the Muni became angry and picked a quarrel with the king out of pride. So he lost control. Yogis are not supposed to become angry. They're not supposed to lose it, as we say. But Durvasa Muni lost it and was actually cursed the king. But because the king was a great devotee of Krishna, he wasn't disturbed. All right, I'm cursed. He didn't mind, but Krishna minded and sent his weapon, the chakra, Sudarshan chakra, which is a wheel, a very sharp, razor-sharp wheel, sent it after the Durvasa Muni, after the yogi. Then the yogi was in trouble. But even through all this, the king, Ambarish, was patient, cool-minded, undisturbed, because he was fixed in Krishna consciousness. And that's what's described in these Sanskrit verses that Srila Prabhupada cites. Savai mana Krishna padada vindya. The most essential point was that his mind was fixed. Because the mind is the center of all the senses. If the mind is controlled, it becomes one's best friend. And if the mind is uncontrolled, the same mind becomes one's worst enemy. So the mind becomes controlled for the king. It was controlled because he fixed his mind on Krishna. It's not that he emptied out his mind, tried to become void. As it said, nature abhors a vacuum. So we try to empty out our mind, it has this persistent tendency to fill up again very quickly. Or we try to meditate on something impersonal, something void, or something, some material object, and very quickly the mind goes off. Try and meditate on a flame, try and meditate on a space, try and meditate on a void, try and meditate on oneness. Hare Krishna.
We clean our room.
Yeah, right. Hare Krishna. Give an asana. Hare Krishna. So we try to meditate on something void or impersonal, but the mind has a very difficult time going along with that. You want me to be empty, but I want something. Like a child. The child wants some engagement. If you tell the child, now just sit in the corner and be good, it's impossible. For maybe 3 seconds, the child will sit still and be good. And right after that, the fun begins. The child will find 100 things to, you know, pull down the cymbals and start playing with them. Take away the cymbals, he finds the drum. I take away the drum and he's all over the harmonium. Do that, then he's something. He'll always be busy. And the mind is like that. Mind wants something to do. But the same child, if you say, now here's something nice to play with, the child can be busy for some time. Not a long time, but he'll be busy. He can play on and on. The child wants some practical engagement. But the mind also needs positive engagement. Just to try to empty it out will be very, very difficult. And the practical engagement is to be thinking of Krishna. This is not only practical, it's not only good technique, but it's the best technique because it's fixing the mind on the ultimate goal. It's not just that we practice thinking of Krishna just to help with our mind. That's a byproduct. By fixing the mind on Krishna, the mind becomes peaceful, the mind becomes joyful, the mind becomes settled. That's true, but that's secondary. The real thing is that Krishna is the supreme object of life. Every one of us has an eternal, blissful relationship with Krishna, a loving relationship with Krishna, which we've now forgotten. And in forgetfulness, we're trying to get happiness by some arrangement in this material world. And we have some time to try to make that project successful, and then time runs out, and invariably we've not succeeded in the project. Death comes and we haven't made any real solution. And even if we think, now I have made a solution, I have a nice house, a nice wife, nice family, good reputation, everything good, but I'm being kicked out. Death means I have to leave it all. And again, I take another body, and I have to start the project all over again. But this is not the business of the soul. This is not his real business, to go kicking around in the material world lifetime after lifetime, trying to find some satisfying situation, and sometimes as a human being, sometimes in some other species of life. This is not his real business. His real business is to revive his eternal relationship with Krishna. Krishna is eternal, we're eternal, and we have an eternal relationship because Krishna is the supreme whole and we're parts of Krishna. As the hand has a relationship with the body, then we have a relationship with Krishna. And when that relationship is revived, we become happy. As a fish has a relationship with the water, you take the fish out of the water, the fish will not be happy. When he's in the water, he'll be satisfied. So we're on the dry land of this material world and drying up. So the yogic practices mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in various places, breathing exercises, sitting postures, and so on, are preliminary steps toward samadhi, or absorption of the mind in Krishna consciousness. But in the bhakti yoga system, one skips so many other steps and directly fixes the mind on Krishna. This chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, is the sublime method for fixing the mind on Krishna. By chanting and hearing, our mind is at once glued to Krishna. It's at once connected with Krishna by sound vibration. By sound. Sound is most powerful. So hearing and chanting Hare Krishna, the mind becomes fixed. We can meditate on Krishna, but meditation, silent meditation, will not be as effective as meditation through sound. The sound is most powerful. Silent meditation, the mind starts to get antsy. The mind starts to wander. The mind starts to, you know, we say sit here and it starts to move there. But by hearing and chanting this transcendental sound vibration, very easily we can fix the mind. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There's no difference between Krishna the name and Krishna the supreme personality of Godhead. So by chanting Hare Krishna, we're coming in touch with Krishna, who's the ultimate goal of yoga. Vasudeva para yoga. Krishna is the goal of yoga. And by chanting Hare Krishna, we have the goal of yoga dancing on our tongue. So this is practical. Sabai mana Krishna padara bindaya. And vachamsi vaikuntha gunarna varnane. The Maharaj Ambarish engaged his mind in thinking of Krishna and his words in speaking about Krishna. The tongue is a very difficult sense to control. It likes to rattle. It always likes to have something to say. And usually it's useless. How are you? Oh, okay. How was your vacation? Nothing. Yeah, and the whole day is... And that's just harmless conversation. And sometimes the conversation is just... It kind of has a way of sort of going down. But the tongue can elevate us to the spiritual platform when the tongue is engaged in speaking about Krishna. And fortunately, there's an unlimited subject matter for hearing. This Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental glorification of Krishna, speaking about Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study of Krishna consciousness, full of transcendental topics of Krishna consciousness. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's pastimes are presented. How Krishna is playing as a cowherd boy. Or later, how Krishna is playing the role of a great king. How Krishna is performing so many wonderful activities. Just in this picture, Krishna has gone out to play with the cowherd boys. He enjoys sporting with the calves and cows and his friends. And back home, those who've stayed back in the village are simply thinking of Krishna. How Krishna's out there in the cow pastures, how he's wearing his peacock feather, how he must be playing with the cowherd boys. They're simply absorbed in thinking of Krishna out of transcendental love for Krishna. And then at the end of the day, Krishna comes back. And everyone is in transcendental happiness when Krishna is returning. In this picture, Mother Jashoda, she's a pure devotee of Krishna, who has the role of serving as Krishna's mother. As there are loving relationships in the material world, these are reflections of the loving relationships in the spiritual world. Of course, God is the original person. No one can be his mother or father. But out of transcendental love, Krishna accepts some devotee who wants to love him in that way. I would like to love Krishna as my child. All right, I'll be your child. I would like to have Krishna as my friend. All right, I'll be your friend. Krishna will play with you. Krishna will reciprocate. Krishna is not simply a concept. Krishna is a person as much as you and I are persons. But he is the supreme person, and he can fully reciprocate with the desires of every living being. In the material world, we can reciprocate to some limited extent according to our limited power and willingness. But Krishna fully reciprocates the loving feelings of all of the liberated devotees who live with him in the spiritual world. So by appearing in this world, Krishna gives us a peek at his dealings in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is far beyond our vision. We can't even see, you know, beyond this universe what's, you know, we see as far as Jupiter, and then we have radio telescopes that see something further out. But far beyond this material world is the spiritual world, where Krishna is enjoying with his devotees. And just to give us a glimpse of those pastimes, from time to time Krishna comes to this world and discloses the show. He gives some demonstration of those pastimes. Although those are recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam, and we can hear about those pastimes and speak about those pastimes, and those topics are both pleasing and liberating. Just by talking about Krishna, the mind becomes purified and we proceed on the path of liberation and transcendental love for Krishna. So the king engaged his tongue in speaking about Krishna, and Karo Harer Mandira Marjanadishu. He engaged his hands also in cleaning the temple of Krishna. To be advanced in Krishna consciousness or to be advanced in yoga, one doesn't have to be a great intellectual, college professor, Mensa society. Even the simplest person can become advanced even by cleaning the temple of Krishna. There's no difference between studying Bhagavad Gita and cleaning the temple. Any service rendered to Krishna is absolute. So, the king, of course he was a king. A king doesn't have to do anything. He just snaps his fingers and five guys come and say, "Yes, Your Majesty, what can I do for you?" But although Ambarish was an opulent king, he took pleasure in personally cleaning the temple of the Lord. Similarly, he was using his ears to hear about Krishna. He was using his eyes to see the deity of Krishna. He was touching the bodies of the other devotees who were also engaged in service. He was smelling the flowers or the tulsi leaves which are offered to the Lord. In this way, he was using his legs to come to the temple. So he was offering his using his head to offer obeisances to Krishna. So in this way, and he engaged his desires. Desires can't be snuffed out any more than the mind can be emptied. To try to become void of desire is not a practical enterprise. And it's unnatural for the living being. Life means desire. If you want to become desireless, you have to become dead. And the soul never dies, so that's not possible. So the desire, but the desire can be directed toward Krishna. And then the desire becomes absolute. It becomes the healthy desire. Now I'm desiring something which is temporary, which is not unrewarding ultimately, unsatisfying. But when I engage my desires in connection with Krishna, when I desire to act in Krishna consciousness, then the desire itself becomes perfect. It becomes perfect. So this Krishna consciousness movement is meant for that, to arouse, reawaken this natural, our natural desire, our natural engagement, our natural life. And it's been made easy for us by this chanting process. And the Society for Krishna Consciousness is meant to give us all the opportunity to engage in this perfect method of yoga, bhakti yoga. So I think our time is a little close. So we'll thank you again. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to ask. Hare Krishna. Are there some questions? Yes.
Minds, we can direct our mind towards Krishna. And then comes our soul, which should be in tune with Krishna.
We can direct our mind toward Krishna, and then comes the soul, which should be in tune with Krishna. Yes.
How this connection between mind and soul takes place? Because I see a gap.
The mind and soul, how does the connection take place? The mind is the, of course, the soul has its own spiritual mind. But at the present moment, we have this body, gross body, and then the subtle body of intelligence and mind. Now the mind is directed away toward, from Krishna. And the soul is being dragged. The soul is being dragged. That is, I, as in my real identity, have to follow my mind. The mind says, "Let's go here," and I go there. Mind says, "Let's go here," and I go there. The senses pull the mind and say, "Mind, how about this?" The mind says, "Yeah," and then off I go. And then later, "Oh, what did I do?" But when the mind is directed toward Krishna, that's our spiritual destination. Then the soul is, again, not going toward illusion, it's going toward Krishna. The Krishna says, Indriyani pranyahur indriyebhya parammanaha manasastu parabuddhir yo buddhe paratasusa. Higher than the senses is the mind, higher than the mind is the intelligence, And higher than the intelligence is the soul. The soul is supposed to be in charge. But in the present moment, the soul is, things are inverted, and the soul's at the bottom. The senses are in charge, and they're being pulled by whatever they grab onto. So Krishna consciousness means, now turn my mind toward Krishna. Of course, that means that the soul is desiring. Ultimately, I as soul am desiring. But I want to go back to Krishna consciousness. I want to come to my natural position. So the soul takes charge of the mind. I take charge of my mind. Huh? See, I have intelligence. It's not I intelligence or I mind. It's my intelligence, my mind. So when I realize my identity is soul, then I say, why am I, the soul, being dragged around by unbridled mind and senses? Let me take charge here. So then the soul says, now, intelligence, let's give some direction to the mind. Mind, please take charge of the senses the way you're supposed to. And then the whole life is directed toward Krishna. And that makes our life successful. Is that okay? Something else? Some other question? Can I see one over here? Yes.
Maharaj, why it seems like when we start with practice in the course of time, it's not becoming easier, but it seems like harder.
Why do we start practice and then it doesn't become easier, it becomes harder? Two answers can be given, probably more than two, but here are two. One is that if we become a little overconfident or negligent, then the process becomes, you know, I'm not making progress. What's happening? Well, I'm not really following. I've lost my focus. So then again, I have to say, well, all right, let me focus on what I'm doing, called keeping your eye on the ball. The other answer is that, you know, to make the Little League baseball team is like an easy thing to do. But then to enter the pro circles, you have to put more into it. So then it's natural you say, well, this is hard. You know, to really score big, it's more effort. Just to coast along, but to really go. So we have a big project. For millions and millions of lifetimes, we've been spinning around in this material world. And now we're looking at getting out of the material world. So this causes great alarm to the material energy. Wait a second, this guy's going to get out. So then she has to send different diversions and try to block your way. And then you have to endeavor. No, I'm determined. I'm not going to kick it in and stay here for another lifetime. I've done that already. Been there, done that for 8,400,000 species of life. Thank you, no. So then it requires some seriousness. It's easy, the process is not difficult, but we should be persistent. Another answer Krishna wants to see, is this person sincere or is he just kind of in it for the ride? No, I'm sincere. And Krishna will help you.